talking about health care, the Affordable Care Act starts to kick in next year, Obamacare. And we were told in the beginning that we would save money on premiums and we could keep our doctor and it wouldn't affect your plan if you wanted to keep it. But that hasn't quite turned out to be true. Avik Roy is a healthcare analyst and advisor. He served as an unofficial advisor, I believe, the Romney campaign. He writes at National Review Online, and he wrote a specific piece for Forbes where he blogs, in a blog called The Apothecary, dealing with healthcare issues. He wrote earlier this week about Washington State, what it means to you. And he's here in town to participate in a conference by the Washington Policy Center later today on healthcare. And this piece in Forbes talks about how it affects you in Washington State. And I asked him to be on the show. Avik, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing okay until I read your headline, which says that my health insurance premiums will go up between 34 and 80%. I thought we were supposed to save money with this.
Yeah, that's what the president promised all during his first campaign and the early days of the bill. He said that the average family would save $2,500 a year in their premiums.
And yet, as I look at an 80% increase or a 34% increase at the low end, that's not saving $2,500.
No, and it's not a surprise to any of us who really studied the law back when it was passed in 2010, because healthcare is like every other sector of the economy. If you regulate it, if you add a lot of mandates to how the product must be designed, it's going to cost more. And that's what's happened with insurance under Obamacare. Now, just to be very precise, we're talking about health insurance for people who shop for it on their own. Right. That's where the biggest increases are going to be. If you get insurance through your employer, the increases will be much less.
Now, as you pointed out in the article, Washington State is a particular case because we went through this kind of Hillary care back in 92, 93, 94. The Democrats were elected in 92. Hillary care was the rage at the time. And we actually went through a very similar process, regulation, control of the market, similar to what they're doing now on the national level. How well did that work out? Refresh our memories.
Yeah, so it was pretty much a disaster. So what ended up happening was, kind of just like Obamacare tries to do today, the law that was passed in Washington in 1993 required insurers to cover everyone with despite pre-existing conditions. Young people were required to pay more so that older people would pay less. The government dictated what benefits the insurers must provide, what healthcare services must be covered by the insurance plan, all that kind of stuff. And so what ended up happening is people just said, okay, I'll just get insurance when I'm sick or when I'm having a baby. I'll sign up then, and then after I'm done after I'm better, I'll drop out. And so people started doing that, and the chumps who actually stayed insured the whole time started having higher and higher and higher premiums. So more and more people dropped out of the system. And next thing you know, you basically couldn't buy health insurance because it was so expensive.
And then a lot of the insurers dropped out of the market. I remember that. I was on the air at the time, and I remember that crisis because more and more insurance companies simply left the state. And
yeah.
we had a restricted market because we didn't have that many providers.
That's right. And so, what happened was, it was kind of a bipartisan screw-up because the Democrats passed all this huge reform package. Republicans repealed all of it except for a couple of provisions that the insurance commissioner
right.
at the time really fought to preserve. But those few provisions are the ones that I was talking about with pre-existing conditions
yep.
and things like that. And so everything still got destroyed. So what does Obamacare do to fix that? It has all these regulations. But it also has an individual mandate to force you to buy insurance so you can't just drop in and out. But even with all that, despite all that, the cost of insurance will go up. So I think it's what's interesting to your point is that Washington already has a heavily regulated insurance market. So you wouldn't expect a big rate increase relative to states like California, which actually, despite its reputation as a deep blue state, actually is a pretty lightly regulated insurance market
mm-hmm.
today on the individual market. But Washington is a heavily regulated market, and prices will still go up by 34 to 80%.
Now, one piece in your piece I found interesting. By the way, folks, this is on Forbes magazine on June 23rd. You can find it in Avik's blog, The Apothecary, if you want to read the whole story. But you point out this letter. Carol Ostrom of the Seattle Times wrote about this woman who, when she got pregnant, signed up for the coverage, then quit after the baby was delivered, and then openly said to Premira, hey, next time I'm pregnant, I'm coming back and I'll see you then.
Yeah.
So people know how to game the system.
Yeah, I mean, look, people are smart, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people in the government tend to think that people are dumb. But people are smart. People figure these things out. And that's why big laws generally don't work out the way you think they're going to work out.
And in fact, one of the things I found interesting in your article is you mentioned that people in government tend to think we have too many choices. And so they're trying to restrict the market so we're not so confused by all the choices we have. Another sign, I think, that they don't give much credit to the population for intelligence.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, there is basically a well established theory that a lot of liberals have that too much choice is bad, and they cite certain economic studies that show that, well, if you go to the grocery store and there are 40 flavors of jam, then you get all, you know, confused. But if there are 6 flavors of jam, then you're more capable of making a decision. So the idea is that, well, you know, let's restrict the number of flavors of jam, and then people will be happier.
And, of course, somehow they're smarter than we are, so they know which choices to restrict us to,
yeah,
to benefit ourselves.
Exactly.
Now, this is coming up, as I understand it. We're going to see this implemented over 2014. They've already taken some preliminary steps. When can the average health insurance consumer here in Washington expect to see these rates start to go up, do you think?
Well, the regulations all kick in on January 1, 2014, but the exchange where you'll have to shop for insurance effectively under Obamacare is supposed to go online on October 1 of this year, so less than 100 days from now. So it's coming up pretty soon. So, you know, the thing to do if you want to save money on your premiums is to make sure that you renew your existing coverage before the end of the year, like around December. So if you renew your existing coverage in December of 2013, you can avoid the Obamacare mandates for at least another 11 months or so. And that way you can maximize the amount of time that you're out of the Obamacare system.
Now, I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard that one of the reasons the IRS is involved in this is that the federal government will use the IRS to enforce this, especially your premiums and penalties. There's a penalty for not signing up. That penalty, I've heard, will be taken out of your tax refund if you get one. That's why the IRS is involved. So if you rig your W-2, W-4 so you don't get a refund, they may be powerless to punish you.
In fact, that's exactly right. So, yeah, they can take it out of your refund. But if you make sure that you don't have a refund because your withholding is carefully calibrated so you don't have a refund,
right,
they can't otherwise force you to pay up. So the law is very specific about that. Unlike normal things, like if you don't pay what you owe normally, the IRS can come after you. They can
right.
put a lien on your bank accounts, all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
With the individual mandate, they can't do that because the individual mandate was so controversial that they watered it down just for that reason. And so with the individual mandate, if you don't have a refund, if the government doesn't owe you money, then they don't have the ability to basically fine you. They'll send you a letter. They'll send you a stern letter saying,
sure,
oh, you owe us this money. But they can't do anything to make you pay it.
Wow. Of course, now, what I see happening, there are obviously some fundamental inherent flaws in this system. And what I see happening is not a total implosion like some are wishing, but obviously a lot of parts aren't going to work. I mean, when people figure out, I'll just adjust my withholding, you have millions of people out of the system and not being able to be fined. You've got higher rates. You've got a problem signing up young people in the beginning. Will they go back to try and tweak this and make it worse than it is, or will they just try and muddle through?
Well, you know, right now you have divided government, right?
Right.
So it's impossible to fix unless both parties agree. And what Republicans are saying is like, look, this is you created this mess. We're not going to help you fix
right.
it. And Democrats obviously want to try to tweak it, but are frustrated that the Republicans aren't playing ball. So a lot's going to depend on 2016. If there's a Republican Senate and a Republican President and a Republican House in 2016, then you might see substantial changes. However, I not only do I not think that Obamacare is just going to collapse and magically vanish, I also don't think it's ever getting repealed. I think there's a lot of talk about repeal in conservative circles and Republican circles. And you have to realize that even under the most conservative or, you know, the disaster scenarios, there's still going to be 30-plus million people on Obamacare-driven insurance in 2016. So you're going to have 22 million people on the exchanges, the Congressional Budget Office is right. And you're going to have another 11 million people who are getting coverage for this Medicaid expansion. That's 33 million people. Now, let's say it's even half that. Still, is the Congress going to throw 16 to 30 million people off of their existing insurance? I mean, think of all the things we're doing on immigration, because 11 million Hispanics voted in 2012, and a lot of conservatives feel like it's important to respect the Hispanic vote. But 33 million people, you're going to throw them off of Obamacare? I think it's not realistic. So I think as conservatives, we have to start thinking about how do we do radical surgery to the law as opposed to, you know, just repealing it.
Now, there are a lot of people on the right who think that this plan was designed not to function well, so that the Obama administration could say, hey, look, we tried to work with the insurance companies. It's not working. We need to go to single payer and have total government control. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm generally not a conspiracy theory guy. I think that I would put it slightly differently. I would put it like this. The left wants universal coverage, and I'm personally not hostile to the concept of universal coverage. There are free market ways to do it. But they want universal coverage, and they want single payer. They want single payer. But they look at it like this. Well, we'll do it the sort of, quasi-private way, using these private insurance exchanges. And if that doesn't work, then we'll go to single payer. So they don't have any stake in the success of Obamacare, in the sense that if it fails, they think it'll be an excuse to impose single payer. But at the same time, I think if Obamacare works, they'll be perfectly happy that it works. They don't, they won't find it terrible that it works, but they don't have a stake in the success. So they look at it like, let's force the insurers to do all these things that we would do if it was single payer, and if they can't figure it out, tough luck for them.
Okay. By the way, say if it works, odds? Are you offering odds on whether it will somehow work?
Well, define work.
Work, yeah, that's right. Okay, good point. They probably have a different definition of work than we would have a definition of work. Let's talk about alternatives. As you mentioned, there's a certain amount of Obamacare that's going to be rooted and established that would probably be very hard, if not impossible, to repeal, much as in your article you mentioned the insurance repeals the left voiced it on us in 92, 93, 94. Yeah. When the Republicans repealed it, they repealed 80%, but they kept some of it. Given that some of this core we may have to keep, if you're advising the Republican president of Congress in 2016 where to go to make a more efficient health care policy, more in line market principles, where do we go?
Yeah, so I've written about this a fair amount as well, and I actually think that, I think there's an impression out there among a lot of conservatives that we had a free market system until Obamacare came along, and then Obamacare was a government takeover. And that's not exactly right. There was a government takeover of the healthcare system in 1965 when Medicare and Medicaid were passed during the Great Society legislation, right? And Obamacare is kind of the cherry on top of the cupcake. Mm-hmm. But it completes the government takeover. It didn't start the government takeover. So I think the first thing we have to realize is we got to reform the whole system. We got to reform Medicaid and Medicare, where we're spending $1.5 trillion a year already, and Obamacare adds another $200 billion to that. So we got to reform the whole system. And there's one aspect of Obamacare, ironically, that can help us with that, and that is the fact that these exchanges that we've been talking about that are going to drive up the cost of health insurance, they're at least private insurance exchanges. They're not single payer. And one thing that conservatives always talk about is, look, one of the big inefficiencies of the system right now is you don't shop for insurance for yourself. You get it through, most people get it through their employer or they get it through the government. It's only about 10-15% of people who shop for insurance on their own. So the point is, we want more people to shop for insurance on their own, but we want them to have the freedom to choose a lot of different options that are affordable. So what you can do, short of repeal, is you can deregulate the exchanges. So just completely get rid of all these regulations like the ones we've been talking about that artificially drive up the cost of health insurance. Let insurers design the plans that make sense for consumers and that consumers want to buy. And that'll drive down the costs. And then you can actually use those exchanges to gradually replace Medicare and Medicaid with private insurance. So the Paul Ryan plan for Medicare reform, ironically, is very similar to what the exchanges do. So they're almost exactly the same. In Medicare, the Paul Ryan plan would involve having an insurance exchange where you shop for plans that are certified by the government, and you get this premium support payment that subsidizes a big chunk of the cost, but not the entirety of the cost. That way, if you buy a more expensive plan, you're paying for that yourself. If you buy a cheaper plan, you pocket the savings.
Okay.
So that's exactly how the exchanges work. And so the idea is, you know, the great thing about, you know, when we talked about the Paul Ryan plan, right, the Democrats said, well, that's throwing granny over a cliff. It's terrible. It's evil. But if you use the exchanges, it's their plan, right? So all I'm saying is, like, hey, if we raise the retirement age for Medicare, gradually put more people on the exchanges, they can't say that we're throwing granny over a cliff because we're using
their
law.
That's right.
So I think that's the advantage of that approach.
Great point. As I understand it, in federal civil service, you have this kind of cafeteria approach where you can choose from different plans based on your needs and your wants. And that's not quite an exchange because I don't think there's a subsidy involved, but it does provide consumer choice, does it not?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. So the federal employee health benefit plan is just like you said. Like, there's this wide range of options. The government subsidizes about 74% on average of the cost of the premium, and then that way, if you buy something more expensive, you have some skin in the game. If you buy something cheaper, you also save money, but it's still heavily subsidized. So that's another approach as well. I mean, I think the key thing from a conservative point of view is you want people to shop for their own coverage, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you want people to pay directly for more of their care. So, you know, when we buy car insurance, we don't buy car insurance to pay for our gasoline and our wiper fluid, right? We buy car insurance so that if we get in a car crash or someone steals our car, we're covered.
Yep, that's right.
Right, it's catastrophic coverage.
Right.
And that's what health insurance should be. If you get hit by a bus or you get cancer, you have a stroke, you're covered. But for routine expenses or elective expenses, you're paying for that yourself out of a health savings account where you're saving for your own care. And that's a far more efficient system. It costs a lot less. The premiums are a lot lower. Singapore has a system like that. It's a universal system of catastrophic coverage and health savings accounts. They spend 1/7 of what we spend on health care, both in terms of private spending and public spending. So if we had the Singaporean system, we wouldn't have a budget deficit today. We'd wipe it out, because we'd be spending so much less on health care.
A valid point, I think, about the third-party pay, because I remember I went to a new doctor several years ago just for something relatively mundane, and I offered to pay cash, and they didn't take cash. I had to have insurance. I said, no, I make enough money. I can afford a $50 office visit. I don't need to have to put the burden on the insurance company. No. We don't take cash. And credit cards, no, it's all insurance. And I thought, this is very inefficient and not very reactive to the consumer. So, Avik Roy, listen, I've really enjoyed the conversation. By the way, he is on Twitter, if you're on Twitter, at Avik, A-V-I-K, if you want to follow him. And that's where we ran into each other this weekend, was Twitter. So thanks. It's been very informative. And keep up the fight. This, I don't think Obamacare will work, and we'll see all the problems, but I think people on the right have to have an alternative. We can't just complain. We've got to have an alternative ready to go and show people how it works in their lives.
That's right.
And you're doing that, so I greatly appreciate it. Good luck today at the conference.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, you bet. Thanks very much, Avik Roy. Again, his blog, Apothecary, Forbes Magazine, June 23rd, the entry about how it impacts Washington State. You might want to read it. A lot to learn there.